CliffCentral.com.
All right, we are live on a Tuesday morning. It's me, it's Shane Gwenya, and it is Ryan Tin, and we're all here to keep you company. And we've got to find out about Ryan's tour with Chrissy Teigen in just a moment. But before we get to that, we've got to deal with some internal politics. Didn't you and Simpiwe go to something you were invited to the other day, like an Insta, what is it?
Instapot.
What is an Instapot? I know you guys are
talking.
I had no idea
what it was
in the meeting last week, and I didn't know what you were talking about. So you've got to help me understand this.
So that one morning when Michael Flax and Simpiwe was on, when you came on the second hour, Michael Flax was talking about how the Instapot is better than the air fryer. Air fryer, you know what to do. So he was talking about this Instapot thing, and it wasn't an hour or two later after the show, Simpiwe got a DM from the people at Instapot, which is basically a pressure cooker, as far as I understand.
Okay.
They said they're having some sort of promo event. We should come through. So Simpiwe and I went. It was, I think, last week, Thursday, and it was at about 6 p.m. We got there. And let me tell you, Garrett, I thought I made a big mistake.
Oh, no. It was like a whole lot of housewives all, like, learning how to use their pressure cookers.
Yeah, so they invited a bunch of cooking influencers.
Oh, God.
And then they had set up different stations. So as I walk in, I said to some people, I was like, oh, no, we should turn around right now because this is going to be longer than an hour. This is going to be a whole evening.
Sounds like lab class at high school. You know, you have to have a lab partner and you have to get together and both of you have to produce some sort of chemical reaction. And if you don't get it right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so it's like that. All right.
The worst part was they didn't put you in group, like your group. So like I went with Simpiwe. Then they would say, okay, no, they'll just count up to, I think, 8. And you'd go into that group. So Simpiwe and I were like put in different groups. And I was like, oh, no, now I have to interact with people I don't even know. And it was so funny because there was another gent in my group. And he came up to me and he's like, do you cook at all? Because, like, these are all cooking influencers. I was like, no, I have no business being that. But he said, oh, so you're just a plus one then. And I was like, no. I was like, no, we spoke about it on the show, whatever. But it was so much fun. And Simpiwe was having fun as well because she was in another group. And so they gave you these different devices from the brand to, I don't know, cook these different meals. And so mine was like a sort of lava cake brownie thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't bad, but Simpiwe didn't want to cook too much. So she would go from table to table and see, and like a master chef thing, and say, oh, how are you guys doing today? And it's like, Simpiwe, you need to be cooking.
So she basically,
not running
she
around.
She took the role of like judging other people's cooking, even though she had no business being there.
Exactly. And then she came to our table and was like, you guys didn't even wash your hands. You guys, like, this is filthy. I'm not eating this.
Is this the video we've got here?
Yes.
Okay. So
this
here
is,
we go.
At the end.
I like this because Simpiwe will be on tomorrow to defend herself. But here we go. Look at
this.
Yes. You've got Simpiwe, tell us
how it went. So I went around all the tables. Guys, we were in the lead. You know, my team is making these delicious ones. And all the other tables were moving. But then you saw one where they put a whole chicken. Let's go home, guys. We already know who's taking it. A whole chicken. And it smells good. Let's go home. It's done.
Did the whole chicken people win?
I don't actually know. We had to leave early because Simpiwe had to go fetch her grandmother. So we left early. But it was just so funny because Simpiwe saw this one group put a whole chicken inside this half air fryer, half pressure cooker.
Oh, my God.
And she was fascinated. She was like, you put a whole chicken in there, which is just hilarious.
All right, well, I'll find out from her tomorrow how she thinks it all went. But, I mean, I love that you guys went to this thing because you got invited and just decided on the spur of the moment you were going to go and see what it was all about. Good work. Very good.
Yeah.
Apparently, the sales, Steph says here, apparently the sales of air fryers in the UK have increased by 3,000%.
Oh, my
God. Well, listen to LeBang's show.
Yeah. And then we've mentioned air fryers, so I have to remind you, because it's become a thing, like and subscribe.
Otherwise, like and subscribe.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, it's really the only excuse that we have to even mention that stupid thing. So if you heard the word air fryer, which I'm going to say again, like and subscribe, because that's what we need. We need everybody to do that. All right, so Shane, you probably don't care about these internal politics of ours, but we've always got like issues with someone on the internet, and Ryan has now gone ahead and picked a fight with Chrissy Teigen, which is probably going to end up being my problem at some point. What did you do? What happened? Explain yourself.
So Elon Musk put out a tweet yesterday. Now, I'm a big fan of Elon Musk, as many people know. I have his tweet notifications on, and I'm getting into Twitter. It's my new favorite thing. Ever since Elon took over, I'm moving all of my efforts into my Twitter page. Right. So I don't have many followers. I have like 138, so who am I? But he put up a thing about how – oh, sorry, Chrissy Teigen started it, actually. Mm-hmm. She put up a story or whatever you call it, a tweet to Elon Musk saying – so now what, are you charging $8 to people just to verify that? So now they can just be robots. Or something along the lines that she deleted the tweet. That's why I feel like I won. But it didn't come off that way. So she put up this thing basically ripping Elon Musk about verification should be free because it should be verifying who you are, not just, handed out to anyone who's paying $8 or whatever. So I tweeted at her and I just said, I said, you have no business being here or being in this conversation because she's not involved in Twitter. Like, you know, this is not a thing. So then I got a reply. My phone just started buzzing and I just started getting like, I don't know, 20 or 30 notifications. And she, I think I've put the pictures in StreamYard there, Garrett, so you can check it out. And,
I can't really read this, but okay. I could have drawn a picture of you from your comment, and it would have matched your avatar exactly. Is she talking about you or Elon Musk?
Me.
Oh, wow. So you actually got a reply from her.
Yes. Jeez. And so said that. And then people started commenting. I looked like, you know, because my profile picture has me. At the time, I had like a set of sunglasses on.
Yeah.
And they started posting meme pictures of like every Republican American ever.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, that's not fair. And then, so I just sent her another tweet back and I was like, what did I say? I said, oh, I appreciate that because she said she could draw me out of her mind. And I said, I appreciate that. And then she hit me back again and said, no, you shouldn't. I was like,
wow.
This is so unnecessary.
So in other words, I mean, you got a reaction out of someone who really should have better things to do.
Exactly. And she deleted the tweet. So I feel like I won, but her fan base hit me with some, pretty decent tweets back.
Did you get
like,
any?
I had to lay low.
Get any new followers?
No.
No,
that was
nothing.
The worst part. I thought at least I could leech some followers off this thing.
Nothing
happened at all.
Wow. I mean, that's so sad that Chrissy Teigen feels the need to reply to you, Ryan. I don't even reply to you on social media.
I know, like, who am I? I've got 138 followers, and you're worried about what I have to say.
Shane, have you ever got into a twar with anyone really famous?
Not necessarily, but there is one tweet that keeps circulating from nowhere. Like, I've even forgotten about it.
Yeah.
But people just keep sending it to me, taking screenshots. Some of my friends will send it to me on WhatsApp. Dude, we see you. You know, because it was quite a... So
what happened?
So if I can just maybe try and remember the content of what really happened, it was again Thibaut Touch was involved in this whole thing. I think it was something along the lines of he tweeted and said, I don't know what he was saying, but in his tweet, I think there was either a spelling error more of a spelling error. And so another guy responded and he said, people who can't sit in the midst of whatever this and that, and they can't spell this and that. And I responded as well after that. And I said, people who can't differentiate between midst and mist shouldn't be, you know, whatever this and that.
Oh, wow.
And that thing just went viral. Literally. I mean, I'm talking about many years ago. It was just so insane. Hilarious. So this day, I still get people who circulate that very same tweet. And they're like, dude. I'm like, oh, my word. Twitter never forgets, and that's the thing.
It doesn't.
And I get worried sometimes when, you know, people post things out there because it that platform just never forgets. It never forgets. I mean, I'm, yeah.
Well, these days, even if you delete your tweet, I mean, someone's got a screenshot of it somewhere, right? So just rather don't share anything. If you're not 100% sure that you would say that to someone, again, to go back to our conversation from earlier, if you wouldn't say something to someone in person, don't put it on Twitter. Just don't, because we'll come back. And I'm telling you, like, you know, in 10 years from now, it's going to give you tremendous insight into someone's psychology. Yeah. But their psychology at that age. And I just worry more for, you know, young kids. I mean, if I think about the things that I would say and do when I was 14, I probably said some things that would embarrass the hell out of me now. But luckily there's no record of them because I grew up before the internet and phones were a major thing. I mean, by the time phones had become something, I was already at university. And I was still stupid, but I wasn't as stupid as I was at 14. And now if you're a 14-year-old who's sitting at home with Twitter and you're like, "Oh, girls really fucking suck," or whatever, you know, it's gonna look so dumb in like a year or two's time. And as you say, the internet never forgets. That stuff's there forever. It's gonna be hugely embarrassing for people, and not just for politicians who are running to try and impress you and win popularity contests, even for people who are trying to apply for their first job, because you know that employers, they've got these HR departments full of useless people who probably just scour the internet all day, and they'll go and they'll look for your stuff, and you're trying to get a serious job in, you know, finance or something, they'll look up your tweet from when you were like 14 years old and go, "Oh, I'm terribly sorry. You know, you once said this thing which was very off-color, so we're not going to give you the job."
Speaking of jobs, Gareth, tattoos, do they matter? People who will tattoo their neck and all that kind of stuff. What do you think of that and employment?
It's a good question because I know a lot of employers who say they don't give a shit. They won't penalize someone who has tattoos. They'll, you know, treat everybody the same. Tattoos are not a big deal. Yeah. And I kind of agree with that. I don't know whether any of our staff have tattoos. Ryan, you have tattoos, right?
Yeah, you do.
He's got
So you got a bunch. Yeah. I've never even – it didn't occur to me that that was a reason to or not have you around. So I'm firmly of the opinion that it shouldn't matter because tattoos have become everywhere and everything. I mean – these days, if you don't have tattoos, you kind of that you're in the minority. So it's become a thing that everybody does, especially millennials, Gen Z. It's like a big deal to have tattoos. Everybody has them. If you don't have them, you're left out of the crew. But people say they don't care and they don't judge. But I don't know. I think that there's still a bunch of people who they won't admit it, but they probably don't like the tattoos, especially older people, say people in their, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, and there's still a lot of them who are powerful in business and who have control over a lot of this stuff. I can't prove it, but I get a feeling like some people don't like tattoos. What do you think?
Yep. Now, I'm saying this because I think I was reading, I don't know where I saw it, the article, SAPS or some government institutions, they don't employ you if you've got tattoos. I think the SAPS, yeah. I think the SAPS, they won't employ you if you've got tattoos. They actually say, they actually tell you, no tattoos. The banks, I think they're also the same story. Yeah,
That's fascinating.
I don't think you'll get employed if you've got tats.
Well, you know where it comes from, right?
Could be wrong, but
It used to be that only prisoners and sailors had tattoos. That was in the old days.
To say.
Yeah, prisoners, because they would get bored in prison and they would tattoo each other. They'd find some sharp implement and, you know, do the very rudimentary form of tattooing. And they'd tattoo symbols of gangs or whatever else that they were in prison. And with sailors, they used to get a tattoo for every place they visited. That used to be the reason they did it. So their skin became like a map of their destinations they'd been to. So there were reasons for them to do it in those days. But obviously, some of that is still stuck because, for example, the police that you mentioned, If you want to, we should be taking anyone who would join the police at this stage. We've got a shortfall of police. They were just saying the other day that we can't get enough people to join the police. So I reckon if you drop the tattoo requirement, you'll probably get a lot more recruits.
Absolutely.
What do you feel, Ryan? You've got tattoos. Do you have any, Shane? Before we get to Ryan?
No, I don't. I actually don't. No, I don't have any tattoos.
No, me neither. Ryan, you've got tattoos. Has it ever come up?
It hasn't. Not really. It's more like if you want to get like a neck tattoo, I suppose. Like, I would love a neck tattoo, but it's a thing of you'll speak to a lot of people like me and they'll be like, we need to be comfortable in our career before we get anything as drastic as that. Obviously, I would never get face tats because I just think they're stupid, but neck tattoos I'd consider and things like that. But that's as far as it goes. I know like a friend of mine, he's a spray painter.
Mm-hmm.
And he got tattoos all the way. What he did was he went to his tattoo artist and he wore a long sleeve work shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, wherever it was, like up to where it was hidden,
right,
he would tattoo himself. So
that's cool.
That it was respectful when he was seen out at work functions,
right,
and things like that. So yeah, it's never come up for me though. It's never been a problem for me. I got this one and I just thought whatever comes of it, like I'm in the creative industry, you know, it is music and podcasting and things. So I didn't think it was going to be an issue, but I do know for some professions, you know, a lot of people, even if you are accepted, they don't take you seriously. It's not fact, but it's not something I can prove, but you know, I don't know why they just have an opinion.
I could care less. It's not a big deal for me, but I know that there are probably lots of people who do. There are also people here in the comments who are saying, I like tattoos, says Ruth, but not doff ones. I met someone who had a little tombstone on her ankle with R.I.P. Yeah, that's... I mean, you know, everybody will say to you, oh, no, all my tattoos mean a lot, but... But some of them really don't. Some of them are like, you were drunk and you and your friends were on holiday and you decided you were going to go and do it. And then...
Do it, yeah.
You know, you have this stupid tattoo for the rest of your life. On tattoos, Game Farm denied employment to a mate's son. He passed all the requirements except the tats, says DK.
Yeah.
Sure, okay. Mm. Hair Today says I'm a piercings person. They go together.
Mm.
A lot of people who have tattoos have piercings as well.
Yeah.
I'm
not the biggest fan of piercings myself, but I rather stick to tattoos, but that's just I don't have any hate for anyone who gets them.
Right.
You know.
Carl says it reminds me of an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where Larry asks about the tattoo on his PA's arm and she won't share it, but it's in plain sight. yeah, and he goes like, what's the tattoo? And she's like, I'm not going to tell you. It's personal. It's private. many gangs are placing their members in the police force. By stopping applicants with tattoos, the police can avoid a lot of the subversive infiltration. That's interesting from parallel parking. That might be a reason why the police don't want tattoos. The number of professionals in corporate SA with tattoos would surprise you. Tattoos are very mainstream. I totally agree. All right. And then what if that new Kardashian had to come and ask you for a job? Which new Kardashian? Who are we talking about there? Is there a new one? Have they bred a new one?
No, I don't know.
Have they?
I don't pay attention too much.
I really don't.
Yeah, me too.
I still don't know anything about them. If swingers have a pineapple tattoo, who gives a damn about other people having tattoos? I like tattoos. All right, says Vincent, because we were talking about swingers yesterday. Apparently the symbol that swingers use is a pineapple.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hair Today says, I wouldn't trust anybody without tattoos. Like myself, I would have had one a long time ago if I wasn't tied down for an installation. I've met high-level businessmen in London, says Jared, with full-sleeve tattoos and corporate meetings, no one bats an eye. As long as you don't have a vagina on your forearm, they should not have that. Wow. Francis says, I'm a woman in construction, and it's well accepted. I have four. There are not a lot of women in construction, so that's an interesting one, yeah. Francis. I still cringe, says Rochelle, when I see a dude with a perving, what, with a perv? My dad used to say drip, I think a piercing is what she.
Rochelle. Oh, piercing, yeah.
I still cringe when I see a dude with a piercing. My dad used to say that he'd rip it out if I brought a guy home with one. All right. Apparently, the new Kardashian is the one that married the shorter Kardashian. I don't. You see, none of us know anything about this.
It's Travis Barker. I know he married one of the
guy from Blink 182.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, is he considered a new Kardashian?
Well, this is like what I'm trying to put together. You know, is that it?
This irritates the hell out of me. Here's a guy who had a career and success long before these terrible Kardashians came into his life. And what do people call him now? The new Kardashian. He used to be the lead singer of one of the greatest bands of the 90s.
Drummer.
But he was in the band Blink 182. So what the hell are we calling him a new Kardashian for? Really?
A lot of people are not happy that he married a Kardashian, especially now with Blink-182 getting back together, which is the greatest news, by the way.
You're very excited by this. Didn't you say they were coming to South Africa or something?
No, I would love them to. I know maybe now they could, but it's not in the works. They do have a world tour going on, but they never were going to come here because Travis doesn't like flying. He had a plane crash.
He sounds like he's quite hard work. Maybe he belongs in the Kardashians.
He had a plane crash, and his pilot and his producer died. He was the only survivor of that plane crash. That's why he stopped flying. It's quite a crazy story.
Well, yeah.
So that's why I figured he's never going to come here. If you want to see Blink-182, you got to get over there.
He could get on a ship.
Exactly. Well, you could.
Ricky says they're going to Australia in February 2024. So that's bullshit, because if they're going to Australia, that's a whole lot further than South Africa, no matter which side.
He has to fly.
I think he's finally got on a plane now. Courtney persuaded him to get on their private jet. And so ever since then, he's flying now. But yeah, they haven't booked South Africa or an African continent. They're going to Australia in 2024. Yeah. They're going all over the US, London. You know,
you're actually telling me that one of the Kardashians was the therapy he needed to get on a plane again. So maybe she's done some good. I mean, let's give credit where it's due, right? I mean, that sounds like an improvement. All right.
Didn't R. Kelly have the same problem at some point?
I think he couldn't
fly because he was on the watch list because of all the younger girls that he'd been messing around with.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, even before that, but yeah.
Yeah. All right. So listen, we got to wrap this up, but I want to give Shane a chance to let us know where he is and where we can find him on social media. So tell us what do we need to know? Handles and ats and all the rest of it.
Very simple. Shane Ngwenya across all platforms. It's all the same.
So Ngwenya is a good Zulu surname. Is there some kind of history there? Are you related to the Ngwenyas we should know?
So Ngwenya is, as you know, for those who might not know, it's translated, it's crocodile. Mm-hmm. That's it. I'm from the crocodile tribe, if you will, down in KZN.
There've been a lot of political people whose surname is Ngwenya as well. So.
Yeah. So yeah, it's quite a popular surname amongst the Zulu, the Zulu tribe. So yeah. So, but amazing. Just very simple, Shane Ngwenya across all platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you name it. It's all the same.
Love it, man.
Very simple to find.
Listen, thank you for joining us this morning. It's good to have you on board.
It is an absolute pleasure to be here. I was telling Ryan off air, I was like, I'm used to doing radio without the cameras and stuff, and now I feel like I'm multitasking. So you're speaking and you're watching yourself, and
dude, it still kills me. I'm still not used to the cameras. It takes the whole thing about radio for me was that it was about imagination. So you give people you give people the sound and let them imagine their own pictures. I think you're the same, but this is different with these cameras, huh?
No, but thanks a lot for having me on your show. I must say, as a parting shot, not that I need a free T-shirt after this. If you do have, it will be great. But I've been a massive fan of yours, Gareth. And since the days when you were still holding it down on 5.
Thanks, dude.
I was a major fan. I still am a great fan of your work. I think that you held down radio and made it what it's supposed to be. And I think I miss those days of real radio.
Thank you. Can I ask you something? Because I'm totally out of the loop. Is there is there anything interesting going on radio that I should know about? And I'm not asking this because I want you to say anything in particular. If there is something I need to know, then because people ask me, and I genuinely have not listened to radio, because if they ask me and I say something negative, they're going to say, oh, he's just bitter and twisted, which I promise you after what, 8 years, I don't really give a shit. But I'm not hearing any excitement around it. Is there anybody who's really blowing the lights out at the moment in radio?
No, not according to me. I think radio is full of influences. We've lost that touch, that orthodox touch of what radio should be, that rawness of radio. I think now it's all about influences. It's all about likes. It's about how many followers I have. Then therefore, I'm giving this particular show. So radio doesn't have a lot of radio people anymore. Mm-hmm. You can count. I mean, with the palm of your hands. I mean, I was thinking about it the other day. Hence, I was referring to Piers Morgan, and I was like, I was so irritated by the way he conducts his interviews. And at the top of my head, I was like, man, I miss those days where we had real people who knew what they were doing. Larry King's of this world, you know, John Perlman's of this world.
Now we sound like old men, so maybe we should stop.
You know what I mean? So,
all right.
I think it's just that, yeah. But thank you so much for having me, man.
Good to have you on. And I'm glad you could join us this morning. Have an awesome day.
Sure.
Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.
I will.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, and as for the rest of us, we're going to have a brand new episode of Blind History. Today, we're looking at a story of an African man, but most people don't even know that this was a big part of his story. Imagine being a black man from, they reckon, somewhere around Chad, which is like central Africa, right? And this guy, in the 1700s, ended up in Russia at the court of Peter the Great. And he was adopted by the Russian Tsar. And he rose to the top of the nobility and the top of the military. And he ended up being a major influence on Russia. His great-grandchild ended up starting a Russian writing movement and was regarded as the greatest writer of ancient Russia, or not ancient Russia, but of Russia in the 1700s and 1800s. And there's such an interesting story here that most of us don't even know about, which is why this episode, I think, will grab you, and especially because it has a link to our own continent. So take a listen to this. Pretty damn interesting stuff. Thank you, Ryan. We'll see you later this week. And tomorrow, don't miss it with Simpiwe. And here it is, guys, Blind History. Somebody called Gannibal. Take a listen to this. It's 1742. A Russian aristocrat and military engineer, fluent in Turkish and French, rises to prominence in the imperial court of Peter the Great. He has all the trappings of nobility, including a country house tended by 300 serfs. He's held in such high regard that the Tsar adopts him. He travels with his father's grand embassy in Europe. He meets philosopher Voltaire, who calls him a star of the Enlightenment. This great figure of Russian history's name is Gannibal. Charming, intelligent, and a man of extraordinary achievement. Oh, and also a black African. Welcome to Blind History with Gareth Cliff and Anthony Miederer, and we are here to give you a look into the interesting people from history. We try to choose a variety of people from all kinds of places, and this guy you discovered, Ant, you found a little article about him, and I mean, now I went down the rabbit hole, and this is what I love about doing this show is I learn new things, even though I'm a history fan and I think I've read a lot of history books. You never know everything.
No, you don't.
This story is extraordinary. Imagine a black man from Cameroon, they reckon, ending up not only in the Russian nobility, but as the adopted son of the Tsar, commanding armies, and ultimately having a grandson who became the father of Russian literature. I mean, you'd think it was made up.
Yeah, it was insane. The black mirror of Peter the Great. It was
unbelievable.
It was just this story. When I read it the first time, it's just incredible. Rags to riches, although he did come from nobility in Africa.
Well, yes, but he was basically kidnapped by the slave trade.
Yeah.
and being the son of a sort of wealthy and well-known either aristocrat or king in Cameroon, he was taken on ships by the Barbary pirates, who were, you know, famous slavers of that period in the 1700s. And the biggest buyers of slaves at that time were the Muslim world, and especially the Ottomans, because they couldn't enslave Muslims. It was prohibited in their religion, but they could enslave pagans. And obviously, you know, all the people of Central Africa were pagans.
They were, and his tribe was pagan.
Yeah.
So his name was Abram or Abram.
Abram, yeah.
Yeah, at the time. And then, you know, when he finally passed away, it was Abram Petrovich Ganibal. And I think as we go through his story, I mean, the Petrovich and the Ganibal are so relevant. Petrovich, son of Peter.
Yes.
Which is Peter the Great. And then Ganibal, because Russians pronounce Hannibal as Ganibal. And the way he operated from a military perspective, they just likened him as the great Hannibal. And we've covered Hannibal in one of our other podcasts.
I think he was taken out of Africa at the age of 8 as a slave. And because he was a slave of noble origin, he was a particularly prized possession. And he was sent to the court of the Ottoman emperor. I think it was Mustafa, the then Ottoman Sultan. I've just come from Istanbul and I saw the Topkapi Palace where Ganibal must have spent some time in his youth. And he obviously started off, you know, cleaning things and tidying up. But he became very good friends with the Sultan's younger brother, who eventually became the Sultan Ahmed. And with that closeness to power, he found himself often enveloped in all those crazy politics of the Ottoman court, which were, I mean, it was a really dog-eat-dog world, and people were always vying for prominence. And he managed to learn Turkish during that time.
He was prolific with languages.
He was clearly a very intelligent guy.
Yes, 100%.
And from an early age, his intelligence seems to have been obvious to people. So they gave him a good education. He spent an enormous amount of time learning mathematics, geometry, military engineering became his forte later on. And an amazing career ensued from that. But what's, I think, particularly interesting is this Russian connection. Because while he was in Turkey, in the Ottoman Empire, in Istanbul, he was noticed by a Russian diplomat. And this Russian diplomat said, listen, when things start to go wrong here, as they always did at the Ottoman court, I'm going to get the Tsar, I'm going to get his permission, and I'll take you and a few of the other African slaves who we think are really, you know, not only brilliant, but also quite exotic and strange in a country like Russia, and we'll take you away. We'll spirit you away to freedom. You can come to Moscow. And they did. They released them into freedom. They weren't slaves anymore there, but they were curiosities. The Russians have always kind of thought of, because it's so far away, Africans as being, you know, very different people. There was obviously a lot of prejudice.
Yeah.
They were the villains in all the stories.
And they always thought they were almost like the bogeyman.
Yeah.
Just amazing, because of all the big names in Russia are linked to Ganibal. We all know Leo Tolstoy. Mm-hmm. So his great-grandfather,
Pyotr,
he was the one that actually facilitated all of this and took Abram Ganibal up to Peter the Great's court.
Right.
And you know, Peter the Great as well, for all his craziness, he was progressive. And, you know, he was definitely trying to bring Russia into more European ways. And his feeling was, look, if this man is of a different color, different culture, we can prove he can fit in perfectly in anywhere in the world, then people will start realizing that openness is the answer.
And merit. I mean, like he was very against the idea of what was then the Russian aristocracy's way of doing things, that you just inherited titles and jobs and names and, you know, all of that was just in the blood. And what he was trying to say here very clearly is, here, I'm going to bring this kid in from far away. He's completely foreign. He doesn't look like any of us. And I'm going to prove to you that him on his merits can get ahead, that I can make sure that if I give him the opportunities that all of you have, he will excel just as much. And he proved exactly that.
Yeah.
I mean, so Peter took a big liking to him, brought him into the household. He was baptized in 1706. Peter was his godfather. And it was personally significant to him because he used that date as his birthday from then on. So he decided that was going to be his birthday. He didn't know the actual date of his birth from his origins in Africa.
But Peter the Great, just a side story. I mean, he loved the dwarfs. and his daughter got married to this lavish wedding, and his son-in-law died of alcohol poisoning on the way back home after the wedding.
Talk about a bachelor's party.
Yeah, so just be talking the other side of Peter the Great. And then he had a replica of his daughter's wedding with dwarfs a week later. So there was some crazy stuff. So he was enlightened, but also a bit of a nutter sometimes.
He received such an extensive education, and even while Peter was on his grand embassy across Europe, he dropped him off in France and left him in Paris for a while, where he met Voltaire. Mm. Voltaire called him the dark star of Russia's Enlightenment.
Yes.
I mean, really incredible how this guy's life intersected so unexpectedly with everyone else. And yet, I'm afraid if you ask most people who Gannibal was, they would have no idea.
Exactly.
His contribution to military engineering, the canals that he dug, mm-hmm. the forts he built, particularly in modern Estonia, where, you know, there are still projects that he supervised and came up with and facilitated that are still in operation mm-hmm. today.
No, that's incredible. But the French connection was testimony to his character and his personality. He joined the army. I mean, crazy in France. He just loved military, loved battles. And he was appointed a captain, and it was the siege of Saint Antonio, something to that effect. That was very successful campaign at the time.
In the Pyrenees.
But then he was blown up to a certain extent. He got injured.
We get injured quite badly.
Yeah, quite. And
they decided to put him in the infirmary.
yeah, exactly. And then he came back to Paris as a war hero. And that was his time, and he'd learned a lot. And then when he went back to Russia, he had this massive welcome. So everybody loved him.
He remained close to the Tsar right up to his death. But then, unfortunately for him, his life took a bit of a turn for the worse because there were some guys at court who did not like him, most especially Menshikov, who was, you know, a typical conservative, didn't like anything foreign, thought that he was suspicious, didn't trust him because he had a black skin. Mm. All of that prejudice came to the fore, and he exiled him to Siberia.
Yeah.
This was a very dark time for him. But he was on the border of, if you can imagine a map of Asia, I mean, this guy's come from Cameroon. In the 1700s, he's gone all the way to Istanbul, then to Moscow, then to all of Western Europe. Now he finds himself on the borders of the known world.
He never got downhearted. Look, I mean, we don't know, but that was 300 years ago or whatever. But
He didn't sit there and sink into depression and do nothing.
100%. And ironically, Menshikov ended up being banished to Siberia as well. So, yeah,
bit of poetic justice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. So, but he did have a lot of that. He had great support with Peter the Great. And then when Peter the Great passed away, there was the distrust, and he was an outsider. And then later on, when Elizabeth passed away, the way they treated him.
The Russian aristocracy were kind of
yeah, that's exactly. Yeah.
But Elizabeth was also very fond of him because they'd kind of grown up together.
Yeah, Peter's daughter, correct.
That's right. And she made him a major general. She brought him back to court, so he wasn't banished to Siberia anymore. He took on a number of wives during this time, not all at the same time, but he had, I think, 10 kids.
Yes.
And was given this beautiful manor, which he retained, with 300 serfs. Mm. Serfs were slaves.
That's a full circle. He was a slave.
Right, from slave to slave owner.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing. And, you know, he had a coat of arms, a rank in nobility. He was actually regarded very highly, ultimately, towards the end of his life. But he could tell, like, by the time Catherine the Great came along, that he was a bit of a leftover from a bygone era. Mm. He could tell that Peter was long gone. People had forgotten about the amazing things that he'd done in his early career in Russia. And he sort of took the hint that he should go and live quietly and enjoy the rest of his life. And he did quite some time on this, you know, big farm that he'd been given with all his slaves and his kids. And one of his grandchildren ended up being Pushkin.
Correct. Count Pushkin.
Count Pushkin, the famous Russian author. That he's called the father of Russian literature. Yeah. And it is, again, a full circle thing. You know, the Tolstoy who discovered him at the court of the Sultan, right through to Pushkin, his own grandson, who was this brilliant writer.
There's a little gap in between where it was the Seven-Year War. They brought him back because he was the go-to man. They brought him back to fix up the Russian military, which he did very, very well. And
he modernized it in some ways too, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And then he started, he loved fireworks, so he could put on the most incredible fireworks displays. And in this instance, he started working on making almost like rockets as we know them today from fireworks. In other words, using them in battle rather than just for a display for everybody's pleasure. And he worked on that. And then that got negative again on him, and then he went back to his big estate.
It's amazing he was also known for these fireworks. I think when he took over as governor of Tallinn, which is in modern Estonia, he put on this big fireworks display, and just by doing that, the whole town, which thought he was suspicious and odd,
he swung them.
100% right. Listen, fireworks can do a lot.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about it, so he's everybody wants to have his plaque or his name somewhere. I mean, in Estonia, in Tallinn, he's got a memorial of sorts there. I mean, there is as well in Russia. There was some confusion of where he was born, you know, Ethiopia or Cameroon, and in Ethiopia, they still got a street named after his great-grandson, Pushkin. But generally, everybody wanted to be part of the story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's amazing that there are still Russians running around. And, we speak about black Russians in history, but we're not actually talking about the color of their skin. And here was this guy in one of the parts of the world that was not known for its tolerance or its progressive thought. And this man managed to rise to the very top of Russian society, make an enormous difference to their military, prove that, you know, brilliance in a military and an academic sense can be attained by anyone from any background in any place. And really for a lot of people who were at that point still quite prejudiced, he was an example of why it was stupid to be like that.
Yeah.
And thanks to Peter the Great and to his tremendous abilities, I think it changed the opinion of so many people in Europe. At an early stage, this is long before the abolition of slavery or, you know, Wilberforce coming along or any of that stuff. So an incredible, you know, kind of persuasive force in Europe at that time.
Agreed. And if you just look at, you mentioned a little bit earlier that he had 10 children. They all ended up in the aristocracy, as you mentioned.
His eldest son was called Ivan. If that isn't Russian.
Exactly. His descendants went into military, so they still had that background from their father or their grandfather. And Ivan, as you mentioned, became an accomplished officer. I think it was in the Ukraine. He became the second highest position you can attain in Russia in the Navy. And then crazy stuff like many of the British aristocracy are descended from Gannibal. You know, the Duchess of Westminster, Alexander, the Duchess of Abercorn, George Mountbatten.
Right. So that's Prince Philip's family.
And what you said a little bit earlier, you know, a lot of us, I have to say myself included, didn't know Gannibal.
Mm.
And if you just read his story, it's insane.
Well, I certainly hope that, you know, that we all have learned something interesting about this guy. I'm really pleased you found his name and decided that we should focus on him because, again, these are those golden nuggets that you find every now and then in history because the obvious big names, everybody knows a little bit about them.
Mm.
But with someone like this, I had to read a lot in order to inform myself on just the slightest thing because I knew nothing. But it is amazing, again, how these historical lives all intersect.
Yeah, exactly.
And in his case, to have been alive and to have borne witness to all of the things that were happening in Europe at that time and, frankly, in the Ottoman Empire and even in Africa, what he could remember. There is still some debate about where exactly in Africa he comes from because he had the idea that he was born of an Ethiopian noble family or royal family. They've done some research, modern historians have done some research, all kinds of comparisons. They figured out that he was probably born near Lake Chad in Cameroon, Cameroon, and that's the most likely possible place where he could have come from. So that's not Ethiopia, which was kind of involved in Europe.
And also the Negroid look versus the Northern African look, so like a Hannibal for that matter.
Right.
There's almost Egyptian-European influence in it. And a lot of, I mean, you know, there's so much prejudice in those days.
Sure.
So to tell a story, they would want to make it more Ethiopia.
Because to sanitize it a little bit.
Exactly, to sanitize
it. But he was a black man.
100%.
And his son, Ivan, looked like a black man. So it was really, for that time and place, properly odd and extraordinary and exotic and weird for the Europeans. But this guy just never let that get him down.
Mm.
And none of it, even, you know, being exiled to Siberia, nothing got him down. He was there to win.
He was a powerful, powerful, powerful character. And what I'm also learning more and more is although we often talk about a global village, and we saw in the pandemic now, everybody's, you know, banding together globally, but the cultures are so different in Russia to China to Western Europe to even the UK is different to parts of Western Europe. The French are different to the Germans.
Well, we think of these nations and people and cultures as being unidimensional, like they're very black or white, no shades of gray. But his story to me just illustrates how at a time where we think history was very binary, there was obviously a lot of stuff going on that wasn't as clear. I mean, you know, slavery, which we'll talk about in the next episode too, because there was a guy who was very pro-slavery in the next episode. Slavery was just a way of life. It wasn't a moral thing for people at that point. And, you know, it's easy to look at history and go villains and victors. But when you observe these things at close quarters, it's not that
it's
simple.
Not exactly.
And this family clearly, you know, illustrate that very well. By the way, his great-grandson, Alexander Pushkin, wrote the book, which was The Moor of Peter the Great, but it was a little bit more than memoirs. It was a little bit of an honorific more than anything else. It was meant to make his great-grandfather look good, and he worshipped the ground his great-grandfather walked on. So they've done a stage version of his book. And there are many other diaries that have been published recently about, you know, the life of Gannibal. I mean, an amazing, amazing story.
Johan, I think it's quite nice. That's always what we set out to achieve, is for people now to go dig a bit deeper and to learn a little bit more about these people that we talk about. And this is just one of these that a lot of us don't know about, and it's been fantastic to learn more about him.
So go and look him up. Gannibal. Fantastic.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Blind History. Every episode is available on the Cliff Central app, cliffcentral.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. In the next episode...
His career was shaped, there was a little bit of luck at least, because his uncle was Captain Maurice Suckling, and he took him under his wing. And he spent his teenage years, first of all, technically learning in the Thames, and then also just going out to sea. So he spent his life on the sea.
CliffCentral.com